Well, I hope you're managing to avoid the winter ills and chills, because actually winter is just starting. And I understand that there's another wave of something heading our way, and maybe the flu, or good God, I hope it's not another rendition of COVID. But anyway, but I was surprised to hear the Minister of Finance, Nicola Willis, say that when a New Zealander turns up at the emergency room, or when a child starts school, they don't turn up thinking about their ethnic identity. Well, they mightn't, but somebody sure as hell in that system makes them aware of it pretty smartly. I can tell you that much. But anyway, look, and of course we know that. We know how the health system has not served us well, particularly the health system, but actually the education system as well, justice system, hasn't served Māori well in the past. So we better not gloss over it. No need to. We can speak the truth. And somebody who can certainly tell us about that, not so much their experience, but also a little bit about the naivety of that comment, I think, from the finance Minister Nicola Willis, is of course Huhana Hiki. Kia ora, Huhana. Nice to have you on Radio Wātea this evening.
Kia ora. Lovely to talk to you again, Mary Picker.
Thank you.
Well, I don't know about you, but I know that when I go in because I'm critical, and usually I'm hauled straight through to, I don't wait in the waiting room, I go straight in, because I only go in when I'm really sick. But every single time, ethnicity comes up. And it comes up because as soon as a neurologist knows it's me, the visiting neurologist, they refuse to treat me because they don't believe Māori any mess. So while in theory everyone is treated the same at A&E, in practice that doesn't happen. And we all know that.
Yeah. And we do know that. And it really rather annoys me when you hear ministers, and I could even say that actually the current health minister too, Dr. Shane Retty.
Mm.
I mean, been a GP, and surely to goodness they must understand. And I mean, there was so many reports that have been done on the health system to show that it is actually racially biased, that it is racist, that it is a prejudice and everything, and our whānau, that members that turn up, do not get the range of options, do not get the treatment options. They certainly don't get the early interventions as the rest of the population. So, you know, we're up against it from the time that we do seek assistance and services from the health system.
Or they dismiss our symptoms. And I can argue that on behalf of a whānau who went in with a rash, and they laughed and said, "Why are you here at emergency for a rash?" Turns out they had shingles. And it could have been encephalitis. I mean, there are meningitis, there's a certain symptom, and one of them is rashes. You don't dismiss someone's symptoms just because you think on the surface there's nothing to it. That's why people go to A&E. And, you know, not everyone goes there waiting for hours and hours out of pleasure. A lot of them go there because they are sick, but they can't afford the doctor. The other lot that go there are people like myself that have no choice but to turn up and get treatment, only to find out that they're not going to treat you. I had an incident 2 years ago, actually. I have an SPC catheter, and it fell out, and I'm allergic to latex. Up here at the hospital, they put in a latex catheter. By the next day, I was having a very serious allergic reaction, and it took 4 hours, and they still didn't triage. So I had to catch a taxi to go to Auckland Hospital, done in half an hour with the right catheter and stuff. That's the problem we have, is there's one, the health system is breaking down. It's falling apart. That was the whole reason why Te Whatu Ora, Te Aka Whai Ora was being created, was to create a new system that wasn't going to go into crisis mode, and it has gone into crisis mode. Allowing pro-smoking again, by not prioritising human lives over money, they've actually created another problem. What we've got happening now, this winter, you've got the flu in here, you've got COVID, and you've got RSV. In Australia, they're at crisis level with their hospitals because too many are being hospitalised, some of them with combinations of RSV, the flu, and COVID. You know, we're just destroying ourselves, and we're doing it to ourselves. No one wants to talk about the reality of what's happening, but disabled are still dying at 11% higher rate than any other group with COVID. So, yeah, you know, it's not over.
Oh, no, it's certainly not over. And I do think that you're right. I think that particularly in the disabled community, members of the disabled community, they're not, I don't think that their issues are given the same weight of consideration as everybody else's. I think that there is the expectation that they don't know what they don't know, so we're not going to enlighten them. And they don't expect people to make waves. And we should be making waves, really. We should be just saying, no, you know, we want to receive equal treatment alongside of every other New Zealander, because most people don't want to enter into the health system if it's not necessary. But when they do, they want to be given good support, good services like everybody else.
And if we look at an analogy here, you know, Nicola's talking about everyone goes in with the same, you know, the same. Well, that's not true. If we look at the history of Western medicine, they did their early research on male cadavers, and females were not given equity. So if you think about it, going in as a woman, because we have a different set of symptoms for things like a heart attack, it's not always obvious to a male having a heart attack. Because women deal with pain in a different way, it's not the same as a male. So, you know, it's not just about ethnicity. It can be gender. It can be age. If you've got other symptoms around, having, say, a brain hemorrhage or whatever, that differs as well. So it really means that when we are sick, we go in there because they are the experts, and yet if we're treated generically, it will become a huge problem. You've got different ethnicities that have different needs with different symptoms. If you're an African American, for instance, and you're living in Aotearoa, if you've got sickle cell disease, we don't know much about that. And yet that is endemic to African Americans. So we can't treat people the same when they walk in through the door. We have to look at their ethnicity, their age, their gender, their weight, and existing impairments or health issues, their poverty, or whether they're somebody that's got a really good income and are going in there because they've got bad hiccups or something, as opposed to someone going in there because they're poor and they couldn't afford to get the basic treatments, and hence now they're diabetic or they've got a heart problem or they're having a stroke. It is not the same for every person. You can't walk in that door equally to begin with.
Oh, you're so right there. I don't know if you caught this. There was a program on television recently. It was in the morning, so I found it very interesting. And it was, I can't remember what it is. You know, when they get people and they all do a sort of like a trial. What do you call those things? I can't remember it. It's not a case study. It's like the trials, you know, when they do a trial study and that sort of thing. And it talked about, women are rarely used in these trials that they have because we have a monthly cycle. They think, well, that's a nuisance that we've got the ups and downs. And so women, because women experience things differently, they say they're better to do the clinical trials. That was it, the clinical trials on males. And so all of the side effects, all of the medication and everything is geared towards males. And that just blew my mind when I heard that. And I thought that would probably be damn right.
And what about menopausal women? What about postmenopausal women? As opposed, you know, men's testosterone drops as they get older. Surely that would skew the clinical trials in favour of women, because men will have estrogen in their bodies by that stage. Women have less estrogen as they age. It is different according to everyone's body. And this is why Western medicine can be flawed. It has its benefits, but so does traditional medicine in some ways, where it's more intimate and you're able to cater to the symptoms, whereas Western medicine is generic and they apply it to everybody. Everyone gets the same range of high blood pressure tablets or whatever, for instance.
We have to look
at people as individuals in that way.
That's right. And I do think that it's for speed of, what would you call it, convenience, that they say, okay, you know, and it's pretty much like, you're quite right, like a one size fits all. And it doesn't matter whether you're a woman of senior years or a young person who's yet to, you know, have children or whatever. It's just, here you are. Mm-hmm. And that's for everyone. Carte blanche medication. And of course, they're not doing anything to say, is this fit for the purpose of this person sitting in front of me?
Exactly.
So, So, you know, do we have to think then, Huhana, about raising our own expectations of what the health service should be delivering to us and start to push back and demand, start demanding that we get what it is that we need in the way of services?
We absolutely do. The fact that we're quiet is a bit of a concern. I sit on the tribunal. I end at the end of this year after 15 years, and we overlook the Health and Disability Commissioner's Code of Rights. I don't see many Māori going through that process when, say, a loved one has died and you're questioning whether or not they were being given the right treatment in that. But those who have gone through, I have had huge respect for a mother of a disabled child where she challenged the doctor all the way, brought it to the tribunal. And when we heard her passion and her love for her child. And we were able to make a ruling based on the evidence that she provided and on the testimonies of her and the health professionals around. You know, you have to step up sometimes. I realise that these systems are hoo-ha. You know, our people don't really like to get into them too much because we've been so burnt by so many systems. But if we don't fight and if we don't keep fighting, they keep getting away with what they're doing. And we have to stop that freedom of that, you know. It's time we came back and valued ourselves and value those whānau members we love and care for and realise that they're important enough to fight for, you know, that's what I would like to see.
As a commissioner, over your years, do you feel that sometimes the system becomes quite negative when you do challenge or when you want information that will help put the whānau's justification for the action that they're taking to and bringing to the attention of the commission? Do you sometimes feel that the people who are currently in the health system can be obstructive more than helpful?
Yes. I've seen it. I've seen it firsthand. I've seen very defensive doctors, medical professionals, and I've seen them really agitate against things. But part of the problem with the tribunal is it sits in the justice system. If we had a kind of a panel that was able to independently oversee these issues differently, we might have something a little bit more conducive to the consumers rather than always to the health professionals. Because how many of us have got bad memories of hearings in court? And how many of them would walk through a courthouse and not feel trauma from that? Wouldn't it be better if we sat them away from a justice system, court system, and had it in a hearing where we could hear people at their levels and not have so much as lawyers involved, but more from a human side? That would be much healthier in my book. But then we need to re-indigenise our health system. If we're going to have a proper all-around wraparound service, we actually need to re-indigenise, not decolonise. We've done that. But we need to re-indigenise, which means we need to bring our Rongoā medicine into compliance along beside contemporary medicine and utilise. So, I mean, I know Whaia Marama today has announced that she's going through with breast cancer. Wouldn't it be beautiful to be able to offer miri-miri or romi-romi or even rongoā that can help alongside the chemo or whatever treatment she has to undergo? It's far healthier to actually look at it holistically than to look at it always clinically.
Well, I did see.
Clinical.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. I did see over the weekend that there's been a huge increase by ACC paying out for rongoā Māori.
Yes.
You know, and I'm pleased about that because for a long time that was just a definite no-no. Not going to have. You know, they wouldn't pay for that. They'd pay for every other damn thing, but not for that. And that's where Māori believe that they, you know, there is healing in some of those traditional ways. And that sort of thing. So I was pleased about that. But tell me, with this current government, is the commission like that one that you're leaving after many years? And I'm sorry to hear that. But will there be changes in terms of the role of the Health and Disabilities Commission?
I haven't heard. They are reviewing the actual legislation itself. But as for the tribunal, it won't have an impact on that because we oversee Human Rights Act, the Health and Disability Commissioner's Code of Rights, and the Privacy Act. So it still will go on. But I do believe that it is time now that we could look at something different that would be far more, marae style, we can have karakia at the beginning, karakia at the end. And in fact, our current chairperson is beautiful in that way. She's top and speaks the reo and always begins with a karakia always ends the hearing with a karakia. But, you know, it would be good to see this as a natural practice, because people find it an aggressive process. I would rather see something that's more empowering for our communities.
Definitely. Now, tell me, what can we do perhaps to encourage and grow the health literacy knowledge of our whānau? Does that lie with the GPs or with our community and iwi health providers? Because I think, you know, once we start to become more au fait in terms of what we can do the basics like eating well, getting good rest, a good warm home, all of that sort of thing, and keeping ourselves free from disease, etc. Now, we do, I think, because things are getting more complex, we need to be encouraging, I think, health literacy as well, right across the board.
Absolutely. And in fact, as you know, the Māori Women's Wealthy League has been doing health literacy through vaccinations, healthy eating for a number of years. We've run some stalls for our Aotearoa. We often go to the healthy stalls that were happening before COVID, not so much since. But, you know, all of that's important. Primary health care is absolutely essential. We should be teaching in the kohanga reo, in the kura, that they do, similar to what they do in Japan, where the children grow their own vegetables and they cook their own lunches, they clean, they do everything that way, and they learn early how to manage. You know, one of the problems we've got with our children is they don't have financial literacy and they don't have health literacy taught to them in school. So they leave school and they carry on the patterns. You're not going to change my age group and the age group before. We have to change the generations from a very young age on how their outlooks are. And then over the next 10, 20 years, that will start to change as they come through. The same way as we're seeing our young rangatahi now in Parliament, who are stepping up and standing. They're the kura kids. And they're now starting to speak out and make a difference. And I actually feel quite excited. So what we need to do is apply that and put our health literacy, financial literacy, some of our civil rights training, put that in the schools early on. We teach our children more than just the reo, more than just, reading, writing, arithmetic. We teach them how to live and survive in a very harsh world and manage it in a way that is empowering to them and to their whānau and to the community as a whole.
So right, Huhana. I mean, and those are complex and challenging issues that lie ahead of us. But I tell you something, you can see it in the young ones coming through, and people say it's the kohanga generation, and it probably is the kohanga generation, and that impacting the rest of their whānau out there, those that perhaps don't go to kohanga, haven't been to kura, but there is, and they have no identity crisis. They want to take their place, their rightful place in the future of Aotearoa, because it's the land of their tūpuna. And so you're quite right. For us, it's exciting, but there's certainly going to be challenges ahead, because once we start to assert ourselves, well, the Dear Pākehā gets really uptight.
Absolutely, you know. And I think, but that's fair. But the tangata tereti whānau out there, they are completely with us. And they are, you know, they've got their identity now. My age group didn't have, the Pākehā kids that I grew up with, didn't know where they sat. They didn't belong in Europe. They felt a belonging here, but they didn't know what to call it. Now you've got the young ones coming in, standing up and saying, I'm tangata tereti. They're owning it. And they're coming through like the kura kids and really claiming that space. We can walk alongside together. We can make that difference. And I believe we're on the precipice of that. But of course, like anything, you know, sand with an oyster creates a pearl. So that agitation that's coming, I believe we're going to see a beautiful pearl evolve out of that.
Well, listen, we've seen, we've had our government in there for just over 6 months now, haven't we? Mm. So how do you, I mean, I just look at everything that's coming at Māori, particularly some of our really good initiatives that were under the previous government. And I'm talking about really that came in under the previous government, which were the Māori wards, which was the Māori Health Authority, some really good stuff. And because they're all being repealed or wiped out, this is, And the other thing too is, Huhana, apart from the impact of all of those things, that impacts on our health as well. When you see the things that can start to undermine how you feel about yourself, your community, all of those sort of things. It's I don't like to see what's going on now.
I don't know if they're going to get very far on a lot of the changes, because there's some legal challenges. I'm involved in the Waitangi Tribunal with the Phase 2 health claims. I've added an affidavit around the disability cuts. I know that Heather Leahy, for her hapu, actually made a statement of that when she gave evidence to the tribunal. I'm on the Piaka Whai order. My lawyers have been instructed to challenge that in regards to whānau hauā, or mana whaikaha, as some will say. And so, you know, I do believe, well, we've only got 2 years and we've got another election, so I'm holding out for that. But there's a lot of damage that they're trying to do. And yes, they are. More concerning for me is that they're wasting so much money on stuff that's going to have to be restored again. But I'm not even sure they're going to make it through the next 2 years. There could be, you look at UK's got a snap election. Who else? France has called a snap election.
That's right. And you just look at the EU, what happened in the EU over there as well, you know, because so we're really seeing this, apart from America, as you say, and then the UK, but the EU elections, that also raises some issues now. So the whole world is, the ground's shifting all around the world, isn't it, really? And so it's going to take, I think it's going to take outstanding leadership for us to find, to find a place to settle in terms of where will this country will be, how can we make sure that we're inclusive, that nobody gets left behind, and that basically nobody has anything to fear when Māori start to flex their muscles, and all they're trying to do is to say, well, we want to share in the future of Aotearoa, and we're not going to sit quietly in the back seats any longer.
There's nothing to fear. We don't want war. In fact, one of the things I've noticed with the hikoi is that the thing that is said at the very beginning is, do not give them any reason to attack us. We do not retaliate. You know, we do this peacefully. We did the same in 1880s when we ended the land wars. We said no more. We don't want to fight. And we've been negotiating peacefully ever since. And, you know, the young ones, they get passion. And I love their passion. But we don't need to. And I feel that the future, actually, I feel hope for the future, hope in our next generations, not hope in mine, but hope in the next. And I do believe that they see the issues. They're getting more qualified, they're getting more educated. There is no going back. We've gone too far forward that while this little glitch is happening now, I don't believe we're going to go back. I believe that we're going to keep going forward. This is just a little stopgap. We will pick up again.
Exactly, exactly. Look, Huhana, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this evening. And Lisa, it's always good to get your perspective, and also to know that you're still there on the tribunal doing what you can and making sure that all of the issues get addressed and given the same weight of consideration as indeed they should be. Thank you so much, Huhana.
Thank you. Thanks, Minipika.
Thank you. Yes, always lovely to talk to Huhana Hickey. And she is a member of the Health and Disabilities, I think, Tribunal, is that it? And been there for 15 years. And unfortunately, she said, I just heard her say that she will be finishing, I think, this year after 15 years. And, you know, we cannot afford to, well, this is my view, that we can't afford to have people like Huhana leave those significant positions because, you know, she has all that institutional knowledge. She has all the systems knowledge. She has hands-on experience, the good, the bad, and the indifferent of the health system. And so she certainly knows how Māori are really experiencing the health system in Aotearoa and has been experiencing that for many years. And it's still not rosy. We've got a long way to go. So it's just always good to talk to Huhana Hickey. Now, let's take some music and I'll be back with you very shortly.